What's up, everybody? This is Alex Kelly back here with another episode of the Furloughed Film Talks podcast with my brother, Ryan.
What's up, everybody?
How are you today, sweet boy?
Oh, I'm doing amazing. Just so amazing. Yeah.
Just amazing.
Just another day in the life of a accounting director. Yeah.
Oh, big guy over there with the accounting director.
Title.
Designation.
Yeah, that's, you know, yeah. Make my way downtown.
Walking around.
No, everything's good. We had a fantastic weekend. Cowboys win. And
they did.
House of the Dragon finale.
So. Yes. Which, of course, we'll be talking about today.
Cleaned out my storage unit. That was a ton of fun.
You were just adulting hard as fuck this weekend, weren't you?
I was, yeah. It was very fun. I enjoyed every second of it.
And I enjoyed that Cowboys victory, but you know what I enjoyed more than that? Even watching House of the Dragon.
That was awesome. Yeah. You know what was even more awesome? You faking being sick so you could watch the FC Dallas game.
That's not why. I was literally throwing up in the bathroom, but whatever.
Okay.
Well. But yeah, we're going to talk about House of the Dragon today. The finale dropped the other night. Sunday night, it was the largest finale on HBO since the Game of Thrones finale back in 2019, which I have fond memories of.
When Alex got fired.
Yes, for watching House of the Dragon. Or not House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Series finale.
Yes. So we will jump into that a little bit later in the show.
I'm kind of surprised you're not turned off of Game of Thrones altogether.
Because that was 100%. That was 100% May. That was not on.
Oh, yeah, it was 10,000%. Well, yeah. I hold some responsibility because I don't remember whose idea it was to, you know.
I think it was a mutual decision.
3 a.m. in the morning to watch this finale, but.
I think it was one of those dumb things where we got like really excited and just started throwing out stupid shit. And then we were just like, yeah, we're doing this. And then,
yeah, why not? Yeah.
Yeah, that became a really bad idea. But. We'll jump into the House of the Dragon season one finale. We have no idea how many seasons they're doing. George R.R. Martin wants to do 4 or 5.
That'd be nice.
HBO's like, do 7. We don't give a shit.
Apparently there's going to be a spinoff of the spinoff.
Yes.
And there's going to be a Sea Snake show with the
Lord Corlys.
Yeah, Lord Corlys, which is cool because that dude's a fucking badass.
Yeah, no, that'd be super sick. So I'd be excited about that. But we will also talk about a movie that is going to be dropping on Netflix this coming Friday called All Quiet on the Western Front, a real family-friendly, fun film that you should all just gather around your TV to watch. If you're listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you cannot see Ryan's smile there because everything I just said was a lie.
Yeah, but real talk, if your kids are like older than 13, you actually should sit them down and watch this because
I try more like older than 15. What the
fuck? No. 13 or 14. They know they need to learn about
the learn today.
These Zoomers are gonna take us into World War III, buddy. They need to learn the horrors of World War I.
What war is like. This was this movie was based off of the book that was written in 1929, that is all about a couple German soldiers in World War One, fictionalized version, but very much anti-war.
Published 1928.
Ah, okay.
And to give you just a little sneak preview of our review, like I am going to grade this movie at a straight up 5 out of 5. Jindo Max heads, because this shit was one of the best, most powerful, just all round best movies I have ever seen.
Yeah, truly incredible movie.
This actually was already at the Academy Awards a couple years ago. It's just now getting its U.S. distribution.
Well, it's on the list for best international film this coming Oscars.
I thought it was at the Oscars of like the 95th Oscars.
No, I looked it up like after we saw it to see where it was in the best international film like categories, and it's nominated for this upcoming Oscars.
Is it, wait, this upcoming?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm like 99% sure.
What, which Oscars is upcoming?
Like Oscars 2023. Let's see. Bump, 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 bump. This is going to be, this is going
to
be.
Oh, okay. I'm full of shit then. Yeah, no, no, no. Okay. So it's, it is the upcoming Oscars.
Yeah.
Some reason I thought the 95th Academy Awards were like a couple years ago.
Nope.
Okay, I totally screwed. Hard. I've been telling all my friends and family completely wrong.
Well, here's set the record straight, Ryan. When is it? When can it be nominated?
It is nominated for the.
Well, no, no, not nominated yet. It's on the list.
Okay, but it'll be, the nomination announcement comes out Tuesday, January 24th, 2023.
Perfect. Yes. Which is
next year.
Exactly 3 months away.
Holy shit. Where has this year gone?
Right into the gutter of time and space.
Wow.
Yes.
Dark. Anyways, yeah. Well, so we'll give a quick review of that. But our first story for the day.
Yes.
It comes out of DC Studios. I don't
know. It's DC. It's not DC Films anymore, bro. It's,
what is it
DC
now?
DC Studios.
Okay.
Warner Brothers made an announcement. Finally, they have tabbed their own Kevin Feige to lead their television and movie enterprises for DC moving forward. And who is it, Ryan?
It's a pair, actually. It is going to be James Gunn and Peter Safran.
Yes.
They have been selected to be co-chairs and co-CEOs of DC Studios, a newly formed division at Warner Brothers that will place DC Films. Story brought to you by the Hollywood Reporter.
Hollywood Reporter got that scoop like they always do, because they just get fed shit. But they are going to have James Gunn of Guardians of the Galaxy fame and Peacemaker fame and the Suicide Squad fame, not to be trifled or confused with Suicide Squad, to helm and basically take hold of what is going to be their DCEU stuff. Ryan was not super excited by this move. Whereas,
actually, now that I've looked up who Peter Safran is,
yes,
this is a fantastic move because he was the head of arguably the best movie universe of the past 6 years in the Conjuring universe. So, yes. Yeah, a little bit more excited now that I know who the fuck Peter Safran is. But honestly, yeah, it seems like a stretch to take James Gunn and then just like make him the head of DC Studios, right? Like, I mean, I don't know. This is kind of like what they've done in the past with Zack Snyder. He like was officially, unofficially the head of DC, all things DC for a while. That didn't pan out great. Like, I guess bottom line, I just have no fucking faith in Warner Brothers to do anything correctly.
No, that's 100% right.
Yeah, so you know, it's just kind of like another new, or like a, you know, point in the overall arc, story arc of Warner Brothers fucking up the DC side of the house, which, to be fair, like, we haven't seen, everyone gives DC Films like a ton of shit, but like, they haven't, it hasn't been awful, right? Like, this year they've released The Batman, which was fantastic.
Yes.
They just released Black Adam, which we haven't seen.
Yeah, which we need to go see.
Which we need to go see, and is getting like mixed to like probably more skewed to positive reviews. And then like the next film is going to be Shazam, the sequel for Shazam. So that's probably going to be decent. I mean, there is everything around Warner Brothers where they canceled a bunch of shit and they delayed a bunch of their movies because they were seemingly on the brink of bankruptcy or brink of having to shutter. I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe this is a good move on their part. It's just kind of a lackluster, grasping at straws type of move on their part, it seems like to me.
To me, it's interesting because like James Gunn is known as like maybe not like a super hardcore DC fan, but like he knows like the lore of DC. He understands kind of like the lesser known characters. And so I think you're going to have a lot of very different and interesting choices that are going to be made. You're going to open up kind of the universe, even though Warner Brothers and Zaslav, or however you say the new CEO's name, was like, we need to like really kind of hone in on Superman, Batman, and, you know, Wonder Woman, and like the ones that are the moneymakers, Green Lantern. Like, so maybe
it makes sense, right?
Yeah, 100%. But it's gonna be interesting to see what direction, you know, James Gunn takes with all this and what characters he chooses to like kind of put the focus on, because he's not gonna just do Batman, Superman. Like, he's gonna want to get into the weird, and like he was the one that helmed what was arguably the most surprising Marvel movie in the 10-12 years that they've been doing this, and that was Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, nobody thought that was going to be really good. Nobody knew who the fuck those characters were when they announced it, and then it became like one of the best MCU movies they've done. So I think with that aspect of it, I think he could really pull some interesting characters and make those into really good movies. So that's what's got me excited about it.
I don't know, like that, because saying that they should focus on Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, like the kind of core top five or top 10 superheroes.
Yeah.
Like that's correct. Like that's an accurate statement, right?
If
like,
that was accurate though, that then they would have done the last 10 years would have been good, but like that's what they've been doing and they've fucked it up to no end.
I don't know. Like, okay, which, like, really the poor movies that have come out in the past 10 years have been like what? Justice League, the original one was pretty shitty. Wonder Woman 2 was pretty shitty. If you go back further though, like in the past 10 years, Man of Steel was good. Wonder Woman 1 was good. Batman vs. Superman,
Justice League was bad.
You get to the extended version, Batman vs. Superman upgrades considerably.
Yeah.
The Batman was really good. Like, I think, you know, they should be focusing on those characters. Like, they should really hone in on, like, the Batman and that kind of line of movies and TV shows. That's going to be fantastic. They need to get it around to making another Superman movie. Like what they try to do.
That got announced kind of last week that they're in development on a Man of Steel 2.
Yeah. So, you know, that's upcoming, but like, you know, sure. If they sprinkle in movies with lesser known characters, fantastic. But I mean, for the next 5 to 10 years, like what I want to see out of DC is like just a Batman movie every 2 to 3 years. I want to see a Superman or Wonder Woman movie every like 3 to 4 years. Like, honestly, I would be cool if DC Studios did nothing but make Batman content. Like, I don't give a fuck about any of the other characters, right? So, you know, yeah, I mean, it's cool that he's able to bring in these like lesser known characters and make cool movies with them, but like, really, they need a Kevin Feige, or they need a Chris Nolan, or Zach's, like, they need someone to come in and be able to say, like, okay, these are our important, like, franchises. Let's really make high, high quality movies around this. And if we want to sprinkle in to fill in, you know, the release schedules with these lesser known characters, great. But make fantastic movies with your core characters. That's what Marvel does, right? Like, Marvel bases their release schedule around like their core characters and then sprinkles in like the lesser known characters over time. Like they took what 15 to 20 years to incorporate like the current cast of characters.
Well, it was like, about 12. It was 11 to 12 years.
Right. But I mean, it really was focused around Captain America, Iron Man, Avengers, Thor, like everything was centered around Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor. And then everything else was just kind of like built on top of that foundation. Like we don't need him coming in and like making movies about random characters and not really doing what the fans want, which is Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman.
But also, I think an interesting thing that you said there, and if you focus in on the movies that you say, or I think all of us have said, are not the best of like the DCEU, you can track that to the WB Warner Brothers like stepping in and kind of going all over what the directors were doing. Main examples, Justice League and Suicide Squad. And so I don't think James Gunn is going to ever really do that, which opens up, and he's going to trust the people that he picks to come in and make the movies that they want to make, which then lends itself to having better product when it comes out as the movie.
Yeah, but that just goes back to just not trusting Warner Brothers, because like, sure, if he has autonomy to do that, that's fantastic. But what, you know, really happened with the movies that didn't work out well was Warner Brothers like overstepped the head of DC and the directors of the movies and implemented like what they wanted, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I don't trust Warner Brothers at all to let James Gunn do what he wants, right?
And yeah, not do that again.
Yeah, there's, I mean, there's no fucking way. Like, if the first sign of trouble with anything in the DC universe, like, Warner Brothers comes in and just, like, fucking goes ham, like, just annihilates and massacres the entire, like, crew for any movie. Like, we saw it with Suicide Squad. You saw it with Shazam. And it's like, they don't let their artists do what
they're like been hired to do.
Yeah, they don't give them the autonomy like Kevin Feige does. Like, Kevin Feige hires an artist, doesn't even really give them a direction on storyline, and just says like, go make a good movie with these characters, and then they're free to do what they want. Warner Brothers, just, I don't know what it is. Like, there's someone or some like group of people there just has, aren't able to like,
they literally have no chill.
Yeah, so I don't know, it's exciting that there's fresh blood in the studio and the kind of revamping things. Hopefully it pans out. I have zero trust that it does, but
you feel like the Knicks or like the Commanders, the Washington Commanders, where it's just like,
yeah, or the Jets or the Browns or like just teams like that. Like, whatever they do, whatever coach they bring in or whatever like high draft pick they get, there's no fuck, you know, for a fact they're not going
to
do anything.
They're going to fuck it up somehow. And it's just like waiting for the train wreck to inevitably happen. And it always does. So it's like, do you want to be hopeful that this is the time where they get it right? Yeah. But like deep down, you're kind of like, I'm just waiting for them to mess this up somehow. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, it's not super hopeful of what's actually going to go down with all of this.
Not at all. I, you know, hopefully, you know, I know they just in the past few weeks greenlit or started production for the sequel to the Batman. So I am like, there are things that I'm super excited for coming out of DC, but you know,
it's cautious optimism.
Very, very much so. Yeah. I'm always pleasantly surprised when something of quality comes out of that studio.
Or just out of Warner Brothers at all.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because not only have they taken DC from me, they've taken Harry Potter, those bastards.
Yeah, yeah. We still going to do our Hogwarts Legacy co-stream. You also still want to do that?
Yes. Yeah. When does that come out? Somebody else was telling me about that the other day. Zach was telling me about that the other day.
When did you see Zach?
Sunday after the game.
Where at?
I just went and met up with him at Three Nations.
You're such an amazing cousin. February 10th, 2023.
Oh shit, that's coming up.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's supposed to come out this month. It's coming out in February.
Okay.
That'll be fun.
I'm excited for that, even though I really haven't been keeping up with it at all.
Do they make Dobby costumes? They have to, right?
100%, yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah, we're going to dress up as Dobby, right?
Yeah, oh my God. Can I share a screen on this recording?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, can you enable it? It's like disabled for some reason.
I have to do it through the set here. Just put it in the chat and I'll share it on my end.
Okay. Yeah. Cause this is kind of hilarious
for people at home.
Our listening audience is going to fucking hate us, but
for the people, what the fuck? That is horrifying.
Right. Would you wear that on stream?
The mask?
Yeah.
We legitimately might give people nightmares.
Cool with me, man.
I love this dude's face. Like, what the hell is this guy doing?
Dude, I don't know. Scroll down a little bit. Like,
what? How many are there?
These are a little less terrifying. I mean,
what is this? Why is there a kimono?
It's sponsored. It's got to be sponsored.
What the hell is going on?
They literally sell burlap sacks.
Yeah.
For the Dobby costume.
I love barefoot funny feet slippers.
Yeah, I don't think we need the slippers.
What is
this? I just want to make you right here. I just want to make you sit for like 5 hours with a Dobby mask on.
I will wear it for 5 minutes, but
I play Hogwarts Legacy by myself and just watch.
I will play it with you as well.
Okay. Okay.
I love the dopey deluxe infant costume as well.
That's pretty funny. What
is happening on this?
Anyways, let's get back to the
whatever.
That's fun.
All right. Well, no, DC is trying to right the ship a little bit. We'll check in periodically, sporadically on what's going on with them. There's not another one for a little while, I guess, February or March, whenever Shazam Fury of the Gods comes out. So we'll definitely have more info on that. We should be checking out Black Adam soon.
Should be. Yeah. Hopefully we'll have a review for that next episode. Did you get last episode from me?
Yes, I need to post that as well.
Okay, cool.
We're going to do a double-decker episode tomorrow.
Let's make sure you actually have it.
Yeah, no, I got it. But Ryan, let's transition from DC movies to war movies.
Alrighty.
It was called All Quiet on the Western Front. It is a German language-made movie that is going to premiere this Friday on Netflix, which they have done like no promotion for whatsoever. Probably because
there's a lot of promotion for it in like Twitter and whatnot, but yeah. I haven't seen anything on I don't watch TV really, but
Ryan, give us a quick synopsis of what All Quiet on the Western Front is about.
Yeah, let me pull this bad boy up. Okay,
I'm gonna go pee real fast.
Oh, this is not going to take that much time, but go ahead. Okay.
Okay. You got this.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm just going to pull out the Wikipedia for this bad boy. Premise. It's 1917 and wartime in Germany as Paul Baumer lies about his age so that he can enlist alongside his friends. All of them very young men filled with romanticized patriotic notions. The reality of war almost immediately dismantles their exuberance. Soon, too soon, Paul is thrown into a trench with little equipment, minimal training, and the swiftly prepared uniform of another soldier on his back. Only the hearty advice of an older veteran prevents him from becoming another hapless statistic on his first day. And this is the TIFF description for All Quiet on the Western Front. All Quiet on the Western Front premiered at the 47th Toronto International Film Festival on September 12, 2022. Following an exclusive engagement at the Paris Theater in New York on October 7th, the film will expand to select theaters from October 14th before launching on Netflix worldwide on October 28th. So currently on Rotten Tomatoes, 94% of the 48 critics are positive with an average rating of 8.3 out of 10.
That's on Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah. I mean, you've got 94%. So
it's 94, okay.
Yeah. So that's a little bit about the film. Alex and I went and saw it at the just drop dead gorgeous Inwood Theater in Dallas off of Lover's Lane.
You said you had thoughts on the theater overall as well.
Okay. Well, what were your thoughts? Because
I loved it, man. I thought it was very unique.
Carry on.
I had been there. Actually, this is funny. This would have probably been 2014, maybe 2013. Okay. I saw Pain and Gain there.
No shit.
I saw it downstairs in the theater that had like the couches and all that shit in there.
Is that theater the one you went, like the room that you went into to get your drink? Is that where the couches are?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there some, okay? So is there another room in there somewhere?
Past the concession stand, whatever you want to call that.
Is another theater?
There's another theater around that corner.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. So, did you not like it?
I've got mixed feelings about it, mostly negative. Okay, so straight one thing that like happened that was like really just fucking crazy. Okay, when we were walking in, did you see like the two people that were in front of us that got in front of me like for the concessions line?
Oh yes.
Okay, right. So I don't know if you heard this interaction, but the two individuals in front of us, there was like a young lady, probably in her like late 20s, early 30s, and there was a skinny British dude about the same age in a wheelchair who clearly had, you know, some disability or whatever, right?
Okay.
And so he's in a wheelchair. He kind of, you know, goes up to the counter with this girl. The girl is like clearly just, you know, friends with this dude. Somewhat like, you know, I maybe embarrassed or shameful of like being out in public and maybe being construed as like this dude's girlfriend or whatever. The first of the guy at the counter, this is like my major gripe about this theater, is the guy at the fucking counter, they walk up and not like normal customer service, like, oh hey, how's it going, like want some concessions, welcome to our theater. This guy straight up, the first fucking words out of his mouth are, we don't have elevators.
What?
I'm not fucking kidding. And then both of them are kind of taking me back, like, what? Like,
no, nothing before that. No, like, hey, how are you?
No, literally
just like, hey, bro.
Just straight up.
No elevators.
No elevator. They're both like, wait, what? And like, yeah, we don't have elevators. Theater's upstairs. Oh, you're here to see All Quiet on the Western Front? Yeah, no, that's upstairs. We don't have elevators. Like, and the dude in the wheelchair is like, oh, it's okay, I'll make it work. Like, pretty much this guy was like, I'll drag myself up the fucking stairs, I guess, to see this movie. Yeah. And it, like, obviously the girl he's with is just like mortified at this point, right?
She's like, why am I here?
Basically. And then it took them like a good 5 to 10 minutes to order their shit, because like they ended up getting nachos. They each got candy. They got popcorn. Like,
that made a terrible joke, dude. Oh my God.
Dude, it took forever. And then like, the line was stacking up behind, like, that was bad enough. Like, that
I did notice as I was getting my drinks, because like the bar was like separate from the like actual concession stand. So turned around while I was waiting, and I could see that the line got progressively longer. And I was like, oh, I guess we just got here at a good time. Not the
guy was 100%.
Not the guy was a complete asshole to a dude in a wheelchair.
Well, not only a complete asshole, but also like in his 70s and slow as fuck. But the worst part of, like, I don't know the worst part, but like then like the line is stacking up behind us. There's like five or six couples behind us in line. There's other two dudes standing behind the counter, and they're like stopping people from going up the stairs or like going like past them. Like, hey, do you have a ticket? Oh, you have to stand in this line and give your ticket to that dude who's like taking concession orders.
Who's taking forever now.
Yeah, taking forever. And like, we can't do it. We're just going to stand here and look like assholes. You have to stand in line and give your tickets to this guy before you can go upstairs. And then to top it all off, I finally came to this dude to order my concessions.
Yeah.
And I ordered your popcorn, I ordered my soda, and I ordered Junior Mints. For whatever fucking reason, they take the Junior Mints out of the refrigerator.
Yeah, where, like, I do remember all, this now.
All like the little like bottled sodas and shit are. And he takes it out of the cooler. And I'm like, oh, do you have any like, you know,
room temperature?
Junior Mints that aren't ice cold, because if you ever had like fucking candy, if it's cold, it's hard as shit. Wait, right?
Hey, real fast, Alexis is watching the 9th episode of House of the Dragon. She just got to the part where the dragon just burst up, and all I heard was, hey,
nice. So, yeah, anyway, so I'm like, do you have any that aren't cold? And he's like, oh no, I'm sorry, I don't. This motherfucker had a shelf full of candy behind him with Junior Mints sitting on the shelf, you know, like a 5-stack of Junior Mints. And I'm like,
nope, Ryan.
I'm like, you don't have any, like, you know, that aren't cold. And I'm like pointing at the ones behind him. He's like, nope, sorry. Do you not want them? I'm like, okay, I'll take them.
I'll take my fucking Junior Mints.
fucking asshole of a man. And then, like, yeah. And I guess the theater had been renovated when they bought it. And I think literally the only thing they renovated was the inside of the cinemas, inside of the theaters. Like, those are nice. But the bathroom, literally, the bathroom was, like, walking
straight out of the 50s.
It was straight up, like, walking into the 50s. So, yeah. I mean, if you're just going to, like, sneak in all your concessions and, like, you know, not use any other facility in this theater, like, it's probably fine. But other than that, I would not recommend it with Inwood Theater.
Well, I think we just need to focus on the guy literally looking at the dude in a handy in a wheelchair and just being like, hey, bro.
Yeah.
No elevator. Like, that's insane.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And to top it, like, oh, my God.
Did, you, just... did your eyes just get, like, super big as soon as you heard that?
I was like, what the fuck, man? And I, like, I turned around to see if anyone else had heard it. There wasn't anyone else in line. I was so mad you, like, walked away. And then, like, we sat down in the theater.
I think I would have, like, out loud just been like, bro.
What the fuck? And then I was actually kind of glad that I was having this interaction over the junior mints as, like, I guess this guy was dragging his limp legs up the stairs. Unfortunately, like,
hold on, you gotta paint a better picture than that. Did he literally get out of his wheelchair and,
yes, like, because I was about to say, like, right at the end of his of him getting his concessions, he, like, asked the dude behind the counter, he's like, oh, do you mind, can one of your, like, one of your employees carry the wheelchair for me as I go up the stairs? And the guy behind the counter is like, I guess, yeah sure. And, like, there's no way that, like, think of, like, you know, the guys who were, like, able to walk with, like, a walker, but, like, they're, yeah, really, like, basically dragging their legs around.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of, like capacity this guy probably had. Like, he was literally probably, like, dragging himself on the rails of the stairs while some employee, like, fucking carried his wheelchair behind him. And his girl companion was, like, was seriously regretting every decision in her life that led up to this.
The fucking crazy part about that story is I walk into the theater after you and he's there in a fucking handicap space in the theater. They had a handicap area.
They
in
did. The yeah, yeah, yeah.
Theater. Like, what the fuck are they doing?
That's a, like, total bullshit point too, right? Like, it's this theater was opened in the 50s. And then it shut until, like, the mid-2000s, like 2013 or something, when they renovated it. They should be fucking required to meet, yeah, like, disability standards. Because technically the building is grandfathered in to prior to the standards of, like, the Disability Act or whatever, right?
Go fuck yourself.
I know. Like, that yeah, is insane that they can get away with that.
Like, the Texas Theater has a, like, I don't even know what the name of it is, but it's
the Texas Theater is a reputable theater. Okay.
Like, no shit. But, like, they have the fucking guardrail thing where it's like a seat that goes up and it's, like, comically.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Yeah. You can get upstairs.
That's what I'm saying. They have that to go up. Yeah. It's a chair that, like, mechanically goes up. So, like, that's their elevator, but, like, it's at least a way to get the fuck upstairs if you need to get upstairs.
Right. Yeah. Which is, like, really important. Holy, it wasn't even important. Like, back in the day, because the only thing was up there was a lounge, but now it's like it's a theater, right? Yeah. So, dear God, I mean, okay, and while we've been saying Inwood Theater, it's the Landmark Inwood Theater by Landmark Theaters. So shame on you, Landmark Theaters.
Like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
what the fuck, dude?
That's wild.
Anyways, I'm gonna review this movie. I just want to trash this theater from now on. I'm literally gonna clip out this entire thing and put it on Twitter and be like, hey, Inwood Theater, what the fuck are y'all doing?
Yeah, you probably should, because, like, I'm fairly certain, like, the manager of the theater and probably their, like, you know, cashier who's been there since the dawn of, you know, moving media, like, like, we're the ones, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. Anyways, let's review the movie, I guess.
Yeah, let's do the movie now. Holy shit.
All Quiet on the Western Front.
Ryan gave a synopsis, I'm assuming, while I ran to the bathroom.
I went through the synopsis. I went through where it premiered, and I went through the Rotten Tomatoes score. But let's talk, first off, about just your kind of your historical understanding of World War I from the German perspective versus what you gained from this movie?
I had zero perspective, really, of World War One, and to be perfectly honest, and I don't know, you probably will hate me for saying this, in our public education or even private education, because I got both of them, World War One is not really as focused on as World War Two is, and so for the most part, I don't know too much about it because World War Two, the main entry point for the U.S. is such a like flashpoint at Pearl Harbor, almost at Pearl Harbor. And then like, obviously we ended the war with two A-bombs. And so my understanding of World War One from any
talking, I'll be right back.
Okay. My perspective from World War One is like zero. And so the fascinating thing about this is not only that you have a new perspective from an American who is seeing what the German soldiers were having to go through, is really fascinating. And they do it in such a visceral way. And when this movie in its synopsis says it's an anti-war movie, oh my God, is it an anti-war movie, to the point where they are very much showing the people on the front lines in the mud and muck starving versus the ones who are like basically planning this war up in their ivory tower with every like nice thing they could ask for and food that they're throwing to their dogs.
That's a good point to point out. There's like really three perspectives. This entire movie is from the German perspective, but there's really three perspectives to key in on. There's the perspective of the soldier, like just the infantryman, the common soldier. There's a perspective from the commander or the general. So they are actually kind of show the general who's in charge of the regiment that the main character is in. And then they also had the viewpoint of a diplomat or kind of armistice negotiator who's played by Daniel Brühl. So like, it's, you know, it's such a fascinating and like instructive movie from so many perspectives. Like our experience of World War One is, you know, pretty straightforward. Like Lusitania is sunk, America gets into the war, we flood hundreds of thousands of soldiers onto the European continent, and we wrap that shit up from like we do. It's really interesting to see it from the German perspective, because everything that we know about World War One is like, okay, Germany bad, Germany was the enemy, we defeated Germany, and like that's that. But it's
why I think this is an interesting movie, because it's like, oh hey, this is like not supposed to be empathizing with Germans, but like I could totally see some Midwest fucking American flyover American being like, fuck the Germans, like I'm not watching some movie about Germans.
Yeah, I mean, like at the end of the day, also, it's like not even about, I mean it is, but if you can look at it this way, it's not really about Germans versus French, British, or Americans. It's really like the kind of ruling class versus the common person.
Yeah,
where, you know, the head of states and the powers that be pit like kind of the 99% of the population against each other. And those are really the ones who suffer, all the way up to the lead negotiator for Germany who signed the armistice. Like even he's affected by it. His son died in the war. Like that's what it's really showing. Like how just brutal it is for the soldiers, for all the family, for the support staff of any army or, you know, organized like war fighting group. Like that is really what it's about, to demonstrate how absolutely catastrophic it is when you know, you go into total war and like the absolute reality of the consequences of total war and how difficult it is to get out of total war.
Yep.
Because at the end of the story, like France and Germany are negotiating the ceasefire and the armistice, and France has Germany so much over a barrel that they're basically like, look, these are the terms. You got 48 hours to agree to them, non-negotiable.
Yeah.
And if you don't agree to this, we are going to annihilate you.
We are going to end everything.
There will no, I mean, in historical context, it probably been far better if they'd gone if there had never been a Germany again. But, you know, hindsight's 2020. But they said, like, look, this is it. And Germany, like, to their credit, the negotiators and whatnot were like, yeah, sure. And then the like spoilers, the batshit crazy part of this movie is where the armistice goes into effect at 11:11 a.m. on the 11th day of the 11th month.
Yeah, what the fuck, dude?
And there's the general or the commander of that regiment decides, like, look,
nah, bro,
these fucking French shouldn't be in our territory. Let's push them out before the armistice goes into effect so they don't control that, like, minor part of territory, I think, in the German Rhineland or wherever it was, right? And so they, like, go on a full-off offensive with 15 minutes until the fucking armistice goes into effect and just get obliterated, like, as they should have. It's just, like, such a authentic look at hubris and the, you know, just total overarching consequence of, like, pitting superpowers against each other in total war.
It was, I think I already said this, but it's one of the most visceral, just hardcore, but, like, done in the best way possible movies that I've ever seen. But it just, it sticks with you of how violent and how gritty and true to, like, how that probably really is. Like, it does not hold any punches in the war scenes to the point where you're just like, oh my God, like, you're tense the entire time.
It's probably, like, as close you could possibly get to reenacting scenes from World War One without actually being in the trenches or in between the trenches in no man land. Like, I mean, I don't have any, like, basis to back this up, but I'm thinking that's as bad as authentic as you can get. Cause, like,
100%.
Holy shit, was it gruesome?
It was very gruesome. It was one of the most gruesome movies I've ever seen, up to and including, like, dudes who have their legs blown off, and it's like, we're not gonna, like, just not show this. Like, you need to see this.
It showed you everything, and it, like, was so, I mean, there's many things that made this movie one of the best movies I've ever seen, but, like, you had the acting, you had the like, perfectly done storyline, you had the beautiful scenery, and almost like a indie artsy film way of shooting this movie. The level of detail, though, in this movie was fucking insane. Like, there was a scene where the main character's regiment or, like, unit is on leave. And when they, like, aren't in the trenches, they're, like, in the closest village, just kind of hanging out. And they, like, a group of characters goes out to, like, where the toilets are, which is basically, like, a bench somewhere in the middle of the woods. And as the two characters are, like, walking across the field into the forest, to go to the bathroom, this isn't necessary, but there's two, like, biplanes dogfighting in the background of, like, which is, like, completely realistic. Like, there's fighting, you know, 20 kilometers away at the trenches, and there's dogfighting between German and French and British planes. Like, of course it's going to go over, like, the most closest village and just be a common occurrence to see planes dogfighting. Like, that level of detail was across the movie. It was just, like, so incredible. Few movies, like, take that much time to, like, show the whole, like, just the whole picture and like, environment in the movie.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Now, I, like I said, and this was the funny thing that I said to the bartender at the theater before we saw it, was, you know, I don't know too much about this movie. I haven't really looked into it. I've only seen the trailer like maybe once. Like, I don't know too much about it, but like most of the movies that I have really loved, they're movies that like I go into not knowing a ton about. And this was the case for sure. Like, this was one of the craziest movies I've ever seen. And it's funny because I think it's going to get a bad rap for the German thing that I was kind of saying earlier, but also German. It's in subtitles, which, you know, there are a lot of people who don't like subtitles and don't like having to fucking read during a movie, which like,
it may be dubbed on Netflix though, to be honest.
I would highly doubt it. But who knows? I have no idea. Maybe I'll check out the first like 10, 15 minutes of the movie just to be like, hey, did they dub this? But I'd be kind of surprised if they did that. No, I think it's one of the best movies that's going to be out this year, and it absolutely needs to be nominated for best international film.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I think I, you know, obviously don't know what's out there, but it'd be, I mean, it should be a favorite to win it. Like, this movie is just so incredible.
You gave it a 5 already.
I already gave it a 5 out of 5. Yeah. What's your, Jindo Masthead rating?
I'd probably say a 4.75. Okay. It's a lot to say 5, but no, I think it's one of the best movies I've seen this entire year. And it's not for everybody, obviously. But, you know, if you can stomach it, it's going to be something that is going to impact you. And I think a lot of people would do well to see this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For sure. Cool.
Cool. We spent most of that bitching about Inwood Theater. Definitely going to have to take that up with them, because that was a wild story to hear from them.
Yeah, just clip the part where, like, I said the dude just point blank told this guy in a wheelchair, like, hey, we don't have elevators.
Yeah.
And sure, you want to see this?
Watched him drag himself up the fucking stairs.
Yeah.
That's the wildest part of that to me, man.
Well, I mean, I don't know, like, what was the best thing for them to do? Like, have employees help him?
Maybe. I don't know. Like, at that point, does that become a thing where that guy doesn't want that kind of help? I don't know.
Well, like, I mean, is it really like in the movie theaters, like, employees' job descriptions to carry people up to, like, I don't know. It's wild.
No, I think that at that point, it's like, okay, well, like, how's the best way we can help you get up the stairs?
Yeah.
And you put it in his hands.
Yeah. Any, like, I don't know, empathetic. Human being would probably do that, but this the cashier at the Landmark Inwood Theater was clearly not very empathetic.
Yeah, he was pretty fed up with everything that was going on, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know what his deal was, but
up to including jackasses asking him for junior mints. But
all he wanted was room temperature junior mints. I did not think it's that big of a deal to
that ask was for. Too much to ask for, Ryan.
Well, fuck me.
All right, Ryan, well, last bit of business. We have been very much into this show. We are super excited for future seasons of this. I actually looked up the book Fire and Blood today to see how much it was. It's $15 on Amazon. Probably going to pick that up here soon.
Have like, you know, an extra 200 hours or so it's going to take to read it.
Yeah, probably could finish it light years before George R.R. Martin will finish Winds of Winter, but that's neither here nor there. We are, of course, talking about House of the Dragon, season 1 finale. Ryan, just before we even really get into this, I want to hear your initial thoughts of this finale episode. Really?
Yeah, it was not. I mean, it was a good episode, but like for a finale...
Nothing,
of a Game of Thrones show, like, this was pretty, it wasn't bad, it just wasn't very exciting.
It was pretty tame.
I was, like, the entire episode, I was, like, working myself to, like, okay, they're going to attack the Red Keep, they're going to attack King's Landing, like, it's going to happen, they're moving towards it, and just as the minutes ticked away, the slow realization that it wasn't going to happen just
kind of set in.
Set in for me, and I was very, very disappointed.
Okay. No,
but,
I,
you know, you don't always get what you want. So
I do understand what you're saying about it, because I kind of had the same feeling when we were watching it, and the ending kind of added some excitement. And it was interesting to hear whoever the hell it was on the like the post show thing that they always do be like, you know, we thought this was like one of two episodes, basically. Like the last two episodes were basically one episode where the ninth episode focuses on the Greens and their reaction to everything. And then the second episode focuses on the Blacks, the Targaryens. And so for me, it was like, okay, putting those two together doesn't really help it all across the board, but this is all set up. This is all set up for what is the Civil War. And this is the first shot in the Civil War. What happened at the end of the show and the end of the finale. So for me, like I'm tempered on like my true criticism of it, but I do understand what you mean by that. And I think they could have done a little bit more, but I still think when we look back at it, we're going to be like, oh, that was the, you know, match that was lit that really set off this powder keg.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope there's like a lot more major conflict in the second season, because like the majority of this season was just like intra house or intra family politicking, right?
Yeah.
Which like the original Game of Thrones show like had a lot of like politicking and kind of court intrigue, that type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But most of it was like inter house type of stuff, right? It was between all the different lords and houses of the realm, the seven realms, right? Like,
yeah,
this was mostly just the royal family, and I've talked about this before, like the royal family, and didn't have much to do with like the entire nation or whatever you want to call it, which is fine. It's all set up. It's all like, you know, kind of the slow draw up to this huge civil war that's about to take place.
Yes.
I just, you know, I think this season might have been a little slower than it should have been. Right.
No, I agree with that. And I think it's fascinating that that's kind of the critique, because they had all those time jumps. And so it could have been almost slower than it was if they had really like stayed with some of the, like taken out the time jumps and let it like breathe even more.
Yeah. You know, and I wonder, it'd be really interesting to read the book. I wonder if like just the first half of the book is like one of the most boring things George R. R. Martin has ever like written. Like just maybe half the book is nothing but like setup and politicking and like leading up to the full blown civil war.
Yeah.
That might be the case. And then, you know, there's a segment of the book that's nothing but civil war. There's nothing but battles, nothing yeah. but like attacks with dragon on the east side, which cool. I mean, it kind of blows it, like you have to slog through. I mean, slog through is a bad word, but like you kind of have to get through the first season without too much excitement, you know, and with a lot of like herky-jerky character development, where you're bouncing from actor to actor, actress to actress, you know. And once we're full on solidified with the current cast, like season two hopefully will be just like full on just an amazing season, like an action-packed amazing season. I think that's going to be the case, and I think this season will go down as like a really really solid like depiction of the first part of that book.
Yeah.
And it will probably be compared to like, you know, the last couple seasons of Game of Thrones. I don't think it should be compared to like when Game of Thrones was at its best, because it certainly wasn't.
No, I don't think so either.
But I think that the story definitely has the capability to get to where Game of Thrones was at its best. Like it has the like original content of George R. R. Martin. And it has super intriguing and interesting characters, and it has like a very exciting civil war. So I think like season 2 and 3 could be fucking amazing. I hope it is. But you know, solid first season. Just
what'd you think
slow
of the,
and boring. And
what'd you think of the last like 5-10 minutes with the dragon battle?
That was pretty badass. Like, I did not see, like, I thought so, like, before the actual kind of chase took place, I was like, okay, no one's gonna die here. Like, there will be a little fight or a little chase or whatever, but like, everyone was gonna make it out alive, right?
Yeah.
And then spoilers.
Go.
What's the name of the kid?
Luke.
Luke, you know, Lucerys, I think, full name. He gets murked. He gets, like, his dragon gets snapped in fucking half, and he probably falls 20,000 feet to his death. I did not see that coming. That was fucking super badass. The, I had seen memes on Twitter where it was, like, Jim from The Office kind of being like, oh, fuck, what did I do with Amon's, like, face on top.
I had seen some of those. So, and then it was like Amon having to walk back into like Allison and telling her. So I thought there was going to be that scene where it was like him having to tell her, like, "Hey, this is what just happened."
Yeah. No, and you know, in season 2, it's probably going to jump straight to like the middle of the Civil War, where then it's some scene like a quarter of the way through or halfway through that first episode. There's going to be a scene with Allison and Amon be like, well, these are the fucking consequences. Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't give a shit if you are having to ride your dragon for the fucking 100th sortie of this war. Get your ass out there and
get out burn there, some bitch.
Fucking Targaryens.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that was a fucking cool scene. It was especially cool to see the behind the scenes post on Twitter about it, where they're actually using the like 360 degree scenery from The Mandalorian that Disney kind of pioneered.
Yeah.
They use that technology to shoot the dragon chase scene, which is fucking super cool.
So dope.
Yeah, that was fun. I enjoyed that.
No, it's funny because in the actual book, like, that's not how it goes down. Like, supposedly Amon like wanted to do that, like that was his intent. He was not like his
it dragon. Was an accident that he
like, yeah
killed
like kid. Supposedly they've kind of changed this a little bit.
That's dumb as fuck. Why did they change it? Like,
I don't know, to be perfectly honest with you. I just know that that's what I've read, and I'm like, interesting, more like nuance to the character, I guess. But I don't hate it. Like, there are people on Twitter and like articles were like, this is a fucking awful decision. And I'm like, no, like, I kind of get it. Like, I kind of understand, like, if he didn't really want to start the war, like, and understood like that would start the war, like, that would make sense that he would not want to do that. But it also adds a very interesting layer where they don't have full control over these dragons. Like, we've all thought these dragons will make their own fucking decisions. And so, yep. Like, that to me is a fascinating wrinkle to this entire thing.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, actually. That, and it's a really interesting contrast because, like, not only do I had no idea this is the case in like the lore of Game of Thrones, but not only do they not have control over like the dragons that they're like the riders for, like they're their dragons, there's also like wild dragons out there that like,
yeah, dude,
there's fucking wild dragons that just nest in Dragonstone that no one has control over, but Daemon is like, I've got this, guys, I'm gonna go down and like sing some old Valyrians this wild ass fucking dragon
and take control of him.
Yeah, and we both thought like Daemon was gonna show up on the back of this wild ass dragon and kill Amon. Like, at a certain point through the chase scene, I thought that was gonna happen. Doubt and fucking awesome, but
yeah, well, you know, I realized
like, the thing with these dragons.
Amon technically stole that dragon that he's on, Vhagar or whatever,
from Daemon's wife.
Yeah, so like maybe that's why he can't control it, because like they might have a connection, but it's not like the true connection that like Laena had with Vhagar or like the other riders have had with Vhagar.
That would 100% make sense, but then it's like kind of interesting that Luke didn't have control over his dragon either.
Yeah, like, but that was a younger dragon. I don't know. Like, I'm just
it was a younger dragon and probably a scared shitless dragon.
Because yeah.
Like, there's a dragon 10 times his size trying to chop him out of the sky.
Which,
yeah,
the daisy
mission, except mission not impossible.
Yeah, Ryan, what would you give the whole first season of House of the Dragon across 10 episodes of this epic Westerosi tale?
I think I would give it a 4 out of 5 Jindo Max heads.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I'm not going to one up you. I'm just going to go 4 okay, out of 5. Cool. I think that's fair for this first season. I think they did a solid ass job. Like, I really, really think they did a really good job with it. Here's something that we can touch on real fast. I'm going to be fascinated that it's not going to be that Miguel guy anymore. He's not the showrunner after this season. He's leaving. And he was the showrunner on Game of Thrones for a little while. So
mean,
it's going
to mean a Condal. Oh, Miguel Sapochnik.
Yeah. However you say his last name.
Who's going to be the new?
I don't think they've announced it, or if they have, I have not heard. I'm hedging my bets, people. So I'm going to be interested to see like what happens with all that shit.
Yeah, that would be super interesting. What are the original duo from Game of Thrones doing now?
Oh, BD and something or other.
Yeah.
Original Game of Thrones
show. D.B. Weiss and David Benioff.
Yeah, I think that's their names.
Yeah.
Showrunner, god damn it, I can't.
They're both, yeah, they're working for Netflix.
Yeah, they're like, we're out of here, we don't want to do this anymore. Benioff and Weiss.
Yeah, I thought they were doing something like some kind of like Civil War alternate history thing, but
yeah, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss.
Well, they should, they're not going to come back. That'd be, I don't know. Yeah, I wish they like could bring in somebody from the original series that could like kind of get it a little bit closer to that, because there were some points in this season where it felt like this was like a cosplay of Game of Thrones in a way. Like, it didn't really feel like authentic Game of Thrones. It felt like someone trying to it's exactly what they're doing. Someone trying to like recreate Game of Thrones, but not really doing it all that authentically.
Oh, it looks like Ryan Condal is going to be, I mean, he is a showrunner now. No, he is a showrunner of the series. Okay, so the other guy, the Miguel guy, was just a producer, but this Ryan Condal guy is going to continue to be the showrunner.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Okay, and that alternate Civil War thing got canceled in January 2020.
Yeah, that got canceled a little while ago.
Huh.
Well, Ryan, this has been a fun episode of the Furloughed Film Talks podcast. We need to go see Black Adam soon.
We should, yeah. When are we gonna do that, buddy?
I asked you some dates yesterday. When works best for you?
Maybe like Saturday. What is your thing Saturday? You have a concert Saturday, right?
Yes, I'm going to see Close Your Eyes.
We could go see what time is your concert?
It starts at 2, but I don't think we'll go until probably like 5.
Oh, okay. I don't know. We'll talk offline.
Okay. Well, everybody, thank you guys for checking out this episode of the podcast. Remember, you can always check us out on Twitter at Furloughed Film and on Instagram at Furloughed Film Talks. But next time, we'll have more great movie and TV show fun for you. So check us out next time. But thank you for listening to us today, and we'll talk with you very soon.
Adios, amigos.